Welcome back to Endpoint TV. I'm your host, Ron Jacobs. Once again, joined by Ford and Igor, and we're talking Dublin and Dublin architecture. And so last time, guys, we had a great talk about some of the interesting whys of Dublin, you know, and why there was a need for this something more than a toolkit, but something much more finished that just works. You drop your service in it. And today I want to touch on some more aspects of this. One of the things that I think a lot of people want to do is they want to build out a farm of servers that's kind of like a business logic farm. You know, it hosts web services. It's not really about UI. It's about highly scalable web services that are doing business process. And so people will say, well, you know, workflow makes a lot of sense, a workflow service. We had kind of built some beginnings of the integration of this with .NET 3.5, but wasn't quite all the way there. So still kind of in that toolkit mentality. What kind of things are we doing to make this a better farm-friendly world?
Right. There are a number of challenges in this farm environments for workflows.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly if you have the stateful work happening on one of the machines,
yeah,
and it needs to do work on the message on another machine that arrived on another machine because load balancer decided to route that message differently,
mm-hmm,
then in today's world, in 3.5, your client gets a failure.
Okay,
because load balancer made mistake, client gets the failure.
Well, this is important. So let's walk through this just a little bit. So if I got three machines, A, B, and C, okay, the client sends a message to the load balancer. The load balancer picks machine A. So it's now waking up. It says, I'm going to run the workflow. It communicates the persistence store. It locks that workflow. Mm-hmm. Moments later, while A is still processing that workflow, client sends another message. Mm-hmm. Client doesn't know what server has it. Load balancer chooses C.
Mm-hmm.
And now C wakes up and says, I want to process this workflow. It communicates to the persistence store, which says, hey, A's got that thing locked. C says, well, I can't do it, and it returns an error to the client who wonders what went wrong.
Exactly. So that's a pretty challenging environment for a workflow that way.
Yeah.
And so what we do in Dublin, we make it safe for customers to set up a farm and run workflows in these kinds of environments. Particularly what we do is when the message arrives in the wrong place,
mm-hmm,
and we, you know, we try to lock it in the persistence store, we don't simply fail it to the client. We actually retry it until the other machine releases the lock, and then this message can be processed. Well, there are two strategies we could have followed here.
Mm-hmm.
One of them is retry,
mm-hmm,
and the other strategy is route the message to a place currently processing.
Okay.
Well, it so happens that for most apps, the safest is actually to retry. Not only it's safest, but also it serves most of the human workflow scenarios that are very prevailing with,
right,
usage of the workflow. The reason why it's safe to do is because security can be processed right at the entry point. So if your network load balancer sent a message to a machine,
mm-hmm,
then your NTLM authentication will happen over there.
Okay.
NTLM is not forwardable. And therefore, well, it's pretty safe for us to retry.
Mm-hmm.
And then we basically move instance to the message rather than moving message to the instance. Well,
okay.
But either way, we make it safe for you to use...
So that's important. Let me just see if I got that. When you say move instance to the message, so using the scenario I had before with, mm-hmm, A, B, and C, A was processing it, C got the message. Now Dublin says, oh, A is processing, I can't do it. So it holds the message... You're holding it kind of in memory,
mm-hmm,
right? And every so often you're retrying.
Mm-hmm.
One of these times when you retry, you communicate the persistence store, and the persistence store says, yep, you can have it now, because A is done with it. So the instant state moves out of the persistence store to
machine C.
Right. So, okay, all this time while the retry and everything was going on, though, a client has been out sitting out here waiting for something. Would it just be a longer wait, right? Is that essentially?
It would be the same wait as if you communicated to the same instance. Because the workflow, let's say you had a sequence workflow, right?
Oh,
and it,
okay,
was doing work.
Yeah,
and until,
yeah,
it reached the point of receive activity that's actually going to process the message.
Yeah.
Well, it's not going to process your message anyway.
It would just be waiting on that.
Precisely.
On machine A if it happened to go there.
Precisely.
Right?
And so even if it reached the machine A, it would have waited until the workflow reached the receive shape, and then your message would be processed. So it's basically you wait on that same machine, or you wait on another machine, and then there is a cost of reloading an instance.
Right.
Which, you know, if your instance is human workflow, highly likely it's not, you know, really a large amount of data.
Right.
So it's probably negligible at that point.
So there's a little cost, but it's better than... What I like about this is it's better than outright rejecting the message, which puts a burden on the client.
Right.
Because then the client has to know to retry.
Precisely.
But just to be clear, you said this is safe, and I would say it's safer.
It's safer.
Safe
it
is
doesn't fail.
Yeah.
It doesn't fail mostly.
Okay. Right. But there's still a possibility that, you know, after some point, you're going to give up on the retries, right?
Right. Yes. We have a default, but it's configurable, and obviously you could configure it to the scenario that you're actually implementing to make the most sense for your solution.
Okay.
But ultimately, you would hit some timeout, and we would return an error to the client if we could never get a lock.
Right.
Okay. And so we're not saying that clients never have to worry about errors when sending this to you.
Yeah.
Right. Although, if that was really important, like we talked about this earlier, like if I just said, hey, I got a client app. It wants to send a message. It's like one way. It doesn't want to wait for a response. But we have to be sure that we never, ever lose that message. Then we're talking about queuing, right?
Right. You either run a queue in between your client and the backend, or you can try to to apply this interesting kind of, again, it gets it safer, but not completely error-free, is you can try to persist your workflow right after you receive the message.
Okay.
So all you do is you drop your receive shape, and then you drop persist shape right after that.
Ah.
And then, you know, make workflow forcefully persist at that point.
Which
will capture message, and then we'll even if a failure happened, you would always roll back to that state.
Which, actually, the persist activity is a new thing, because in workflow 3.5, there wasn't really a way to make a force or persist, although what a lot of people did is they made a custom activity and marked it with persist on close. So we essentially did that for you, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. But just to be really, really clear with everybody out there in TV land, the only way you could 100% guarantee is to you would probably do a transactional write to a queue on the client side.
Correct.
Then you would guarantee the things in persistent storage. That's the only way you could be 100%
correct.
Safe.
Right.
If you need those guarantees, yes. And if you have a web client, there are web clients usually are built such that they can tolerate some of these errors, or humans can that sit in front of the client.
Speaking of all this troubleshooting, one of the big challenges of distributed systems is always trying to understand when messages get lost, when errors happen, where did it happen, what was the root cause, you know, where is the data, and all those kind of things. And so WCF has mechanisms for doing this. Workflow 3.5 has mechanisms for doing this. But the two aren't super well integrated, right? So it's tricky today to figure out what's going on.
Right. And we made some investments in the framework, .NET 4.0 framework, to improve that story quite a bit. And then we leveraged it in Dublin to expose it in the most usable way we could.
Right.
So what we did is in the framework is... in .NET 3.5, as you said, there are these two stories.
Yeah.
Not only that, but the WCF troubleshooting story is mostly debug trace troubleshooting.
Mm-hmm.
So for an IT pro or for anyone who wants to make sense out of WCF tracing, you sort of in the land of a developer trying to understand method entry, method exit, and there's a lot of noise coming out.
Mm.
So what we did is we actually made sure that WCF traces what we call an analytic into analytic channel of event tracing for Windows.
Mm-hmm.
That's a very performant, you know, eventing subsystem in Windows. And then we made sure that the workflow is also tracing or tracking into that same subsystem.
Mm.
So not only that gave us the same place where both events appear that we can, you know, look at, but it also gave us a common data model to be able to correlate between the message arrival and an activity picking up that message and doing work on that message.
Okay.
So what you couldn't do before is you couldn't go from a message to the workflow in any kind of easy way. So we made sure that that's possible in the framework.
Okay.
In Dublin then, we capture these events, we put them in the monitoring database, and then we process those events and make sure that we have some useful counters, extract useful information about workflows, processing messages, or coordinating work with other services. And we expose it in a dashboard that's accessible for you through our tools in iNet Manager. So you can go and you can look at information about WCF services, receiving messages, number of errors, number of calls in the last 24 hours, that kind of statistics. Mm-hmm. Then you can look at that statistics and say, oh, I got these three services that are failing me all the time. Let's right-click on those services. Take a look what the heck they were doing when they were failing. Mm-hmm. And then you get the information about the service that's actually failing. So, for example, my service has been failing all the time because it can't read some file. Well, that's useful, but you need to dig deeper. If that workflow, if that service was implemented as a workflow, you can right-click on the service and say, what instance of the workflow was failing? And look at what the workflow was actually doing inside when the error happened. That gives you enough of visibility to be able to say, oh, I need to fix a certain problem. Maybe, you know, some file access control needs to be fixed to make sure my system keeps going. Not only that, but once you detected the error, kind of linking it back to our story, mm-hmm. you can go back to the workflow after fixing that file and resume that instance.
Ah, okay. That's great. That's very helpful. So, and this linking into the event tracing for Windows is a powerful thing because that's a common tracing infrastructure for everything in Windows Server.
Precisely.
Right? So there's lots of tools that understand how to work with it and that sort of thing, right?
Right.
And the data model includes an activity ID that gets passed between different
That's
products
right.
and technologies so that you can do end-to-end tracing across this scenario, even through ASP.NET,
yes.
and I'm not sure if I could enumerate all of the technologies that support it, but most Windows components do at this point.
You can even look into SQL calls at that point, saying, you know, my workflow was trying to use SQL, and what happened, why it didn't work out.
Wow.
Not only that, you can trace from ASP to WCF service to the workflow down to SQL. You can also trace between the distributed services trying to communicate over the network.
Mm-hmm.
So this activity ID actually flowing not only between local components mm-hmm. inside of your Windows box, that same activity ID is actually flowing with the message being sent or being received. And then it gets propagated through the processing. And then when that next message comes out, there is a transfer recorded. So a transfer records basically a transfer from one activity ID to another. That allows us to build effectively a message flow that says how these messages went through the system and then trace down the particular service that was failing up the chain through, you know, five services up and then a WCF and the website up front.
Wow. That's really
That's pretty
great.
Powerful technology over there.
So now many of the customers who've come to rely pretty heavily on workflow have been ISVs, largely because they wanted to give their customers a way to customize the business logic. Mm-hmm. And rather than hand them a bunch of source code, they say, well, here's a workflow. You can, you know, put your stuff here. And so that's great, and a lot of them have been really successful in doing this. And these guys, you know, they have a higher bar, right, in terms of the supportability. You know, they've got support people, they got calls coming in, they need a lot of troubleshooting and so forth. What kind of help is there in Dublin for ISVs?
Right. So we actually, this is one of our key focuses to serve ISVs, as well as kind of the end users who will use iNet Manager to manage, you know, web apps. There are two, architecturally, there are two interesting statements we can make about it. One of them is we engineered the system to be componentized. Mm-hmm. So every component of Windows, every component of Dublin could actually be used on its own without necessarily buying into the other component. For example, you can use monitoring and not persistence. And you can use some of the configuration tools or configuration experience without having to persist or even without having any workflow. So some of these subsystems that we put in Dublin are actually used could be used standalone. Second thing is we made sure all of those subsystems are extensible. There are a number of entry points the ISV can leverage. Let's take an example of monitoring.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say you are an ISV and you have workflows and you want our system to run those workflows. But you want to build your own UIs. Your customers are not those who will go to IIS Manager and observe statistics about your services. You want to expose it in your own UI. Let's say it's ASP.
Mm-hmm.
So you're building an ASP website that has billing information. So what you can do is you can leverage our monitoring database that we put in Dublin. So monitoring database has a schema for monitoring events that we put in that our tools leverage. And you're free to actually create a website that feeds information from that database and exposes it in your own forums or in your own reports.
Or you can even put those tables in your own database, right?
Precisely.
It doesn't have to be a standalone.
Precisely.
Right?
We made sure that both persistence and monitoring could happen into the databases Dublin creates and into the databases you create, in which case we just put our schemas in your database and we make sure that the information can live within your database.
Speaking of the databases, one of the things that I heard from people was, hey, you know, in workflow 3.5, every workflow type has to kind of have its own persistence database, or at least that's the way the default schema mm-hmm. came out. There was actually an article in MSDN Magazine about how to extend the schema to make it work with multiple types sharing a database. Is that something you've addressed in Dublin
so,
as well?
So in Dublin, we tried to follow as much as we could a very simple configuration model where mm-hmm. you can configure a set of shared databases for monitoring and persistence at the level of the server. Mm-hmm. So anything underneath of server, unless specifying other databases, can leverage the shared databases. So your app doesn't even need to say where it persists because it propagates down from the configuration upstream. Mm. And you can configure that on server, mm-hmm. site, application, or individual service. So you're free to create your own the databases per app.
Okay.
Or leverage shared database in the farm.
Ah, okay. Well, that's great because that follows the config model that people come to expect from their websites, right?
Precisely.
Ah, well, that's a beautiful thing. So, all right, just to reiterate, though, Ford, people are going, when could I have Dublin? Okay, we talked about this a little bit last time, but just to reiterate, what is it?
So we're going to ship kind of on the heels of .NET 4.0 mm-hmm. and Dev 10. And we're part of Windows Server and Windows Server 2008 R2, mm-hmm. but we're going to ship as an out-of-band component with this release. So we're going to ship after them as well. And then in the next release of Windows Server, we'll be in the Windows Server box.
Okay.
So we think of it as being in the wave of the .NET 4.0 release. It won't be simultaneous, but it'll be within a few number of months after that.
Okay. So, and I'm sure there'll be, you know, between now and then, little, you know, CTPs and betas and things people can try out.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, this is all coming down the road and really exciting stuff, guys. Thanks so much for giving us a drill down.
Sure. Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
All right. For Endpoint TV, I'm your host, Ron Jacobs.